You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Tom Michael. Coming up later in the program, an astronomy expert on black holes. And on Twitter, what questions do you have about black holes? Tweet us now with the hashtag Idaho Matters, and we'll be sure to ask our expert later this hour. But first, it's Friday. It's a look back at the week's news with journalists from around the state. Today, we'll talk from tariffs to wildfires, all the way to Jerry Kramer of pro football. It's our reporters' roundtable. It's really more of an oval, though, guys, right? Our panelists today are Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, and Scott McIntosh, also with the Idaho Press. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to have you here. Well, Betsy, the sun rose orange today in the Treasure Valley and in the Wood River Valley and in other parts of our listening area. The smoke from wildfires is everywhere. You wrote about experienced fire managers and specialists coming to NFCE, that's the National Interagency Fire Center here in Boise, not just from around the country, but from around the world, Australia and New Zealand. Why?
Well, basically, we need help with our Western United States wildfires, and this is kind of a long-standing exchange. The Aussies and the New Zealanders have come in and helped us before. The last time was in 2015, but I noticed that this year the numbers are greater. We're bringing in 150. That's almost twice as many as we've brought in before, and it sounds like the fire managers are very grateful to get this experienced and specialized help on Western U.S. fires. Now, it's interesting that in past years there have been times when our firefighters have gone over there, and the difference in our seasons makes that exchange possible.
And Bill, how does this season compare to others? Even anecdotally in the past, here we are in early July.
Early August, actually.
Excuse me, early August. Right. Where am I, Tom?
So I was thinking, you know, July and August in Idaho, it's going to be smoky. It's going to be hot. We're going to have fires. And we've had a lot of smoke this summer, but we haven't had the big Idaho fire like we often have. So much of the smoke and much of our really gorgeous sunrises and sunsets have been smoke from California and Oregon and British Columbia and other places. Typically in Idaho, we need to dry everything out for the summer. So often our biggest fires, we don't get till mid to late August, even September. So we're not out of the woods. But so far, this has been a smoky but pretty light on fire for at least southern Idaho.
And it's not just the Treasure Valley, not just the Magic Valley. No. Salt Lake City, that valley from Provo to Ogden, also experiencing a lot of smoke.
Smoke everywhere. And I think it's our new normal. You know, the way the climate is changing, and we have longer seasons and longer and hotter fires. And I think it used to be we had smoke when we had fires. Now we have smoke when everybody else has fires. And I think we're all going to have to get used to that and you know, deal with the new reality.
Scott McIntosh from Idaho Press, you had a great story this week about trade war hitting Idaho dairies, cherries, and beer. What is the national significance locally? And your reporters dug in and they pulled up exact numbers. Like, this might cost my dairy $4,000 a year. What was the reaction to that article?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of surprising. You know, we were surprised that folks were so willing to talk to us about specific numbers. You know, we talked to one dairy who said he was losing $4,000 a day. The Idaho Dairymen's Association said that it's costing $1 to $2 per head per day in the dairy industry. And then, you know, we started thinking about other industries in Idaho and Treasure Valley. Cherries and apples are being hit by tariffs from China. And then we said, hey, you know what? What about aluminum and steel? Those tariffs, maybe they're affecting our brewery. So we have Mother Earth Brewery, which moved to Nampa just a couple of years ago. And, well, they put their product in aluminum cans and steel kegs. And they are also being affected by the tariffs. Some people are hopeful that this will kind of equalize out, and this will be kind of another new normal, and everything will kind of come out in the wash. But other people are concerned that this could trigger another recession. So we're going to keep in touch with these businesses and just see how they're doing along the way as these tariffs continue.
Any of those surprised to you? I mean, people think of aluminum tariffs and they think automatically of something like a brewery. Mm-hmm. But cherries?
Yeah, you know, and so this is all the retaliatory stuff that's going on. So China slapped, I'm trying to remember the number exactly, 50% tariffs on cherries. So they had previously set 10% and 25% tariffs on cherries, and then they increased it to 50%. So our cherry producers here in Idaho are really feeling the effects of those tariffs.
Bill.
The one benefit that I've seen is that we've had really cheap cherries. So I've spent the summer gorging on cherries. So their loss has been my gain. They're delicious and they're cheap.
That's true.
Speaking of delicious fruit, a lot of those berries along the Boise River and other places are just about ready.
Yeah. Well, Idaho has really made a big push, I think, in the last 10, 20 years to increase its international trade and to step up the presence of Idaho products in world trade. And that means that this comes home in a very big way, and as we saw in the Idaho press story.
$1 billion to Canada and Mexico from Idaho exports alone.
So be watching this story as it continues to unravel. This is our Friday Reporters Roundtable. You're in tune with Idaho Matters. Now, Betsy, you had a story this week about an opening coming up on the Idaho Supreme Court. And how for the first time since statehood, more women have applied for the Idaho Supreme Court opening than men.
Absolutely. There were 6 women and 5 men applying for this opening. And this has never happened before. And it's extremely significant because Idaho doesn't have very many women judges. We rank 2nd to the last in the nation. Only about 17% of our state court judges are women. And particularly on the Idaho Supreme Court, only 3 women have ever served on that court. And our current governor, Butch Otter, has appointed lots and lots of judges, and he has made a point of trying to appoint more women and minorities, as have the courts, under former Judge Karen Lansing and Judge Sergio Gutierrez. They developed a plan to enhance their recruitment and try to get more diverse candidates to apply. And some of those are really now paying off. And Governor Otter has said this time around, with the last appointment he'll make to the Supreme Court, that it would delight him if, all things being equal, the best candidate were a woman. It now looks like there's a better than even chance that that can happen.
So to the casual observer, this isn't necessarily related to a quote-unquote women's movement in the country seeking elected office. This has a lot to do with some of the prep work that has been done in the past.
Absolutely. I think that where Idaho ranks as far as women's representation in its judiciary is considerably low. Compared to most states and compared to where most people in Idaho would expect it to be. And historically in Idaho, there weren't very many women lawyers, so it was hard to find people to appoint as judges. But that's not true anymore. And in our law schools now, we're getting close to 50-50.
Bill Manning.
What's been interesting is to see how the discussion has changed, and Judge Justice Burdick and others are being very deliberate about that. And I think part of that is due to Betsy and other reporters who have really focused on this and in their reporting and kind of highlighting this gap. So I think some of the credit goes to Betsy for just staying on this story.
You mentioned the 50-50 in the law schools. The recent film that came to Boise RBG about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of her relatives described being at Harvard Law School just last year, and it was also a 50-50 split in graduates. So that's a change that's happening across the country. Well, we talk about news of the week. We can also drop in some breaking news. Herds of goats loose in the north, and oh my goodness, you can go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org and see pictures of these goats. You can go to the Idaho Press website as well, and it's not just local people that are interested. Scott, you were saying the Washington Post is suddenly interested in goats loose?
Yeah, and one of your guests said that she had a friend in Atlanta who saw the story, and this is a Middleton company, We Rent Goats, that was renting out a herd of 118 goats to clean up a retention pond. And they pushed through a fence, a retaining fence, and went into a residential neighborhood. And so I think the positive is that there are going to be some people in this neighborhood who don't have to mow their lawn this weekend.
And then we're talking of Boise, of course. And Bill, you're shaking your head.
I'm shaking my head that this has become the thing on Twitter, given everything
big
that's happening
this has been
in
news.
Our country and our world. But I just want to know that if anybody uses the headline, goats on the lamb, they owe me for my copyright.
Ouch. Ouch. Bill, I wanted to say with you about another story that isn't always on the front pages. The Idaho Statesman gave a tip of the hat, or the helmet, I should say, to Jerry Kramer, pro football player in the 1950s and 60s, deep roots here in Idaho. Well, for newcomers, who is he?
Absolutely. So Jerry Kramer, he played on the Green Bay Packers 1958 to 1968. He was on the team that won the first 2 Super Bowls. He played for Vince Lombardi. He played with Bart Starr. And A lot of his family and his friends and his colleagues have been lobbying for years and years to get him in the Hall of Fame, and it's finally happened this year. And my sense is it's nothing but good news for Idaho and for this kind of humble Idaho guy who really celebrates his Idaho roots. You know, after his career, he retired to Idaho, and so I think it's just a great day for him and for our state.
Remind us where he grew up and where he went to school.
He grew up in Sandpoint. He played high school ball there. He played played football for the Vandals, and then got drafted and played for the Green Bay Packers his entire career.
You know, there's a bar in Hyde Park, a Boise neighborhood, festooned with Packers regalia. There are different watch parties of the induction ceremony in Canton, Ohio, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and in your column in the Statesman, you talk about where those are.
And I also should note that the Great Idaho Potato is also going to be in the parade in Canton tomorrow. So there's Idaho is well represented.
Well, we will continue with our Friday Reporter Roundtable after a break. You know, if you've got questions or comments for our panel, you can always get them in now with a hashtag on Twitter, hashtag Idaho Matters. I'm Tom Michael, and you're in tune with Idaho Matters on Boise State Public Radio News. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Tom Michael, and we appreciate those folks tweeting at us. We just heard from Mary, who said, she was surprised, interested to learn that, quote, Idaho has cheap cherries. Well, we're continuing our conversation with our Friday Reporter Roundtable. Our panelists today include Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Betsy Russell with Idaho Press, and Scott McIntosh, also with Idaho Press. Scott, I thought I'd start with you on the Idaho Press. There was a story this week on new developments in the Canyon County Jail temporary steel trailers saga. We've been covering it on the program. You've been covering it in your newspaper. What's the latest wrinkle?
Well, the Canyon County Commissioners were scheduled on Tuesday to award a contract, a 7-year, $11 million contract to a company to provide these trailers to house female inmates at the Canyon County Jail. The commissioners held off on a decision, I think probably for a couple of reasons. One is that they have a pending permit application with the city of Caldwell. So they have to go through the city of Caldwell to determine whether the city will allow them to put these trailers in the parking lot. And that hearing is on August 14th. So they might have been waiting to sign a contract until that approval goes through. The other part of it is that the commissioners are declaring a sole source procurement for this. And this is essentially saying that we're not going to put this out for competitive bid or request for proposals. We're just going to pick one company. And under state law, there are two parameters that will allow somebody to declare a sole source procurement. One is that there's only one company that can accomplish this. And I think in this case, that's not really the case. I think there are other companies out there that could provide this service. The other area of state law is that this is an emergency. And, you know, I think the emergency clause in the sole source procurement code is supposed to be used for the levee is about to break, town is about to be flooded, we don't have time to go out for bids. This is not really an emergency. It's urgent. It's a need. So I think there are several questions surrounding that. So I think after the August 14th hearing before Caldwell Planning and Zoning, we're going to find out more what the plans are for these steel trailers.
Well, they have to declare whether it's for expediency or because no one else can supply this.
Right. And I don't know if they've proven that no one else can provide this. And we've actually received emails from other companies that said, hey, you know, there are other options out there. And then the emergency clause, you know, I don't know if it's a pending emergency that all of a sudden there are going to be inmates running the streets wild and imminently. So I think the declaration of emergency in this case is maybe a little suspect.
I mean, we do chuckle. We have been covering this, but is there a fear? Are people frustrated by this?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the sheriff is definitely frustrated that they're having difficulty housing all of their inmates, that they have to take into consideration the level of crime in order to put people in jail. And they're definitely trying to figure out, and this all comes in the backdrop of we still don't have a decision on whether they're going to put a bond on the ballot in November for a $180 or $200 million new jail that we're still waiting on a decision on that.
Well, also thinking about upcoming elections and other things, openings, the next Idaho State Lands Director, an important position. Betsy, we heard you talk about this in the past. More than 60 people applied for this role.
That's right. A total of 67 people actually applied to be the next Idaho State Department of Lands Director. Now, this is not an elected position, but it's an important position because it's the head of an agency who reports to a board that happens to consist of all of the top elected officials in Idaho and is chaired by the governor. And they oversee, the lands director oversees 300 and some employees, everything from firefighting to protection of public trust lands. And I think that I was a little bit surprised that the current acting director, David Greschel, who had been the deputy director and state forester, did not apply. He was not among those who applied. There are three finalists who will be interviewed this afternoon by the land board, but we don't expect an announcement today. It could be next week. But I did speak with David Greschel, and he is just really happy where he is. He's based in Coeur d'Alene. He has family there, and he loves his job and wants to continue being the deputy director in state forester.
Is this a hot-button job ever? Does it ever rise to the occasion of, hot button?
Well, sure. This person is on the spot, accountable to the top elected officials for the management of all our public trust lands. And it was a fairly high-profile position with Tom Schultz, the previous director who left in January. Surprisingly, though, with that many applicants, the three finalists who are being interviewed this afternoon are all from in the state. There's Bill Hagenson, who is currently the acting deputy director at the department, Terry Murison, who is the head of the Soil and Water Conservation Commission, and Dustin Miller, who heads up the Governor's Species Conservation Office. So all people actually from within Idaho state government.
Mm-hmm. The headline today in the Idaho Statesman was Security Officials Vow to Counter Threat to Midterm Elections. It was a national story, but it was about how potentially within that story about how that threat from malicious forces may target smaller election districts. This is speculative, but could they go down to the Idaho level? And if so, what assurances do that we have that our elections are safe? Bill?
I'm not sure I know exactly. I do know that we have the top security officials in this country saying this is an issue that needs to be on the top of everybody's mind. In talking to Idaho officials, especially Ada County, they're very aware of it. They've done tests and they've hired consultants to do analyses because voter registration and actual voting computers are not online. So they're fairly comfortable that the actual voting and the actual tallying cannot be hacked. I think what we're seeing and what we're likely to see is hackers who play havoc with some of the campaigns. And you've seen that with Claire McCaskill and other places around the country. So you have government agencies that are gearing up, but a lot of these campaigns don't have the same expertise or technology to protect their systems.
And speaking of expertise, this state does have something to contribute to the national concern and debate on this. We have cybersecurity experts at the INL, Idaho National Laboratories, working on these and I imagine similar issues. Betsy, what is your contribution to this?
Well, there's great concern among those states that don't have a paper backup for election results or that only have a partial paper backup for election results. But Idaho has always had a paper backup. That's something that former Idaho Secretary of State Ben Asersa insisted on as we modernized and got into the technology. So we have full paper backup. Not only that, we have some counties where they still vote on slips of paper. So that's one thing you can't hack.
Mm-hmm. Scott, I guess congratulations are in order. The Idaho Press this week announced that they purchased the Boise Weekly, the longtime alt-weekly here in Boise, Idaho. The definite moves to expand the market from Canyon County to include Ada County more directly. I guess maybe you could describe the reasoning behind that purchase as far as you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a push into Ada County, and it will serve as our Boise Bureau. Betsy will be based there, and she is our Boise Bureau Chief, and she'll be bringing three news side reporters covering Boise City Hall, Ada County Government, and Ada County Cops and Courts, as well as an Ada County sports reporter will be based there. And then, you know, Boise Weekly is a well-known and well-respected brand in this valley, and we're going to be providing that as an added value to our readers. So it just made a lot of sense to purchase Boise Weekly. And I've known Sally Freeman, the owner, I should say previous owner. She will stay on as publisher. And I'm looking forward to working with her because she's also very well respected in this community.
And we spoke to your publisher, Matt Davison, and, you know, brought up the we all get along here, but we say, are there newspaper wars happening? And he said, quote, I don't know that I would call it a war. And so, Bill, I thought you'd get a response in there from the Idaho Statesman.
My first reaction is this is completely unfair because now Betsy gets an office right next to a brew pub, Boise Brewing.
And, I better watch out for that.
You know, I don't speak for the Statesman or for the publisher or for the business, but I do think that all of us in Idaho journalism believe that any expansion or investment in journalism and reportorial assets is only a benefit for readers and for the community, and this kind of thing will keep us all on our game.
Well, we've been talking about things like free press, fair elections, and fair trials. There was a trial that raised some eyebrows. I thought I'd stay with you, Bill. Can you describe what you saw?
So fascinating case out of Magic Valley where a 39-year-old or 39-year-old teacher was acquitted in a rape trial for having sex with a 17-year-old girl, who a former student that he was no longer – he was a teacher. He was no longer teaching there. She was a former student, but she was no longer his student. But the jury decided that they didn't want to label this guy a rapist and acquitted him. And it just absolutely flummoxed the prosecutors in the case and me as well. And it just seems like it's one of those bedrock understandings we have is that, you know, 16 and 17-year-old children cannot make the decision to have consensual sex with adults. And so it's a really fascinating case, and I think a lot of people are going to be talking about it. You know, we've all had this kind of queasy feeling when an 18-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl kind of get caught, and then do you label this couple, you know, are they committing sex offenses? But this is not that kind of case. This is a teacher and an adult and clearly an underage child. So I would think that defense attorneys are going to be examining this case, and I think you're going to see a repeat of this defense in future cases.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is one of those, I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, this seems to be one of those cases that on its face, it is a crime, that the very definition of the crime, that's what was committed. And, you know, so you have a lot of talk of jury nullification, of juries saying that they don't agree with the law, and so they're acquitting. And I don't know where the judge was on this to say, yep, we're going to let this jury verdict stand.
Well, more on that in the pages of the Idaho Statesman and the pages of the Idaho Press. We've been talking on our roundtable with Betsy Russell from the Idaho Press, Bill Manny from the Idaho Statesman, and Scott McIntosh from the Idaho Press. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Well, up next, studying black holes. It's not easy. We'll get up close and personal with space. That's coming up on Idaho Matters. This is Tom Michael, and you're in tune with Boise State Public Radio News.